You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
We have a very honored guest today, the Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, the Honorable Billy Nungesser. Hi, thanks for joining us. We have a lot to talk about. First thing I want to ask you, is it nice to be able to sit back and to be Lieutenant Governor and not have to worry about running for governor this year?
It really is. It's, I still got a race to run, but yeah. but knowing that the pressure and the competition in that race would have been incredible. And like I told all the other Republicans in the race, a lot of us are going to get middled out. And so we saw that in the last governor's race. So if we're going to have five Republicans in there, one of them's not going to be me and do that battle. And I don't like don't do negative campaigning. And so we know that's going to creep into it. So I feel very comfortable with my decision. I love what I do. And we still got a lot of work to do to get back to those record-breaking numbers. We enjoyed five consecutive record-breaking numbers before COVID.
Yeah. You know, I've always said that the best job in politics is to be a lieutenant governor. I think it's a great job. I think it's a cool job. You do some important things, get to travel a lot. It's a prestige. And then every morning you wake up knowing there's a possibility that by the time the day's over, you're going to be governor. I mean, that makes me kind of haunting, too.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I was at the border with seven lieutenant governors when the lieutenant governor of Iowa got the call that her governor was being appointed by Donald Trump. And when she got home, she was going to be sworn in as the next governor.
Oh, gee.
Same thing with Missouri. And so three or four of my lieutenant governors in my first term and so got elevated to the governor's office through the president appointing their governors to jobs, and one of them got in trouble. So you're right, there's always that possibility that something will change in the course of your term in office.
So I would think if you were a lieutenant governor or a vice president, at least in the back of your mind, you need to have a scenario like, what if it happens today? What do I do?
Well, I have a notebook that I keep. And I try to stay current on what's going on with the governor. You know, during all the disasters, the best, you know, Jimmy Fitzmaurice endorsed me when I ran. The only person endorsed me when I ran. And he said, Billy, you got to promise me two things. No matter who wins governor, you're not running against him and you never talk about him in public. I said, Jimmy, I don't care. Just take a picture with him. I'm so glad to have his endorsement. The week after the election, he called me up and said, don't forget what you promised me. I didn't think a Democrat would win, but I sat down with John Bell and said, Governor, congratulations. I reached across the table and shook his hand, said, you have my word. I'm not running against you, and I'll never talk bad about you in public. Let's work for the greater good of Louisiana. Best decision I made as lieutenant governor. I've sat in every meeting with him. We don't always agree. We disagree in those meetings, but we leave there trying to work for the greater good of Louisiana. And it's given me a seat at the table for every disaster. And I've been able to play a role in some things in housing in the state parks for disasters through COVID. We did a video conference with President Trump every week. So it's better prepared me if that was to happen. And hopefully I'll have that relationship with the new governor. So if something did happen, I would be able to step in and be effective immediately.
You know, within your career, one of your jobs was parish president of Plaquemines Parish, and you got to be pretty familiar with disaster during that time. What you caught Katrina, and then you got the Deepwater Horizon oil spill.
Katrina, Rita, Gustav, Ike, Isaac, five hurricanes, three that flooded the parish, and the BP oil spill. Yeah, we had quite our hands full, and I was able to work not only through those disasters, but help with New Jersey and New York doing Hurricane Sandy, make recommendations, which ultimately led to the Sandy Act to change some policies to help us recover better. We still have a lot of work, but it really made me not an expert, but so familiar with FEMA process, I've actually been able to help a lot of local leaders through these last disasters over in Lake Charles and Cameron in getting things done a lot quicker by standing up to FEMA and saying, no, the law allows us to do X, Y, and Z. So I hope to continue to be able to use that expertise in the future to help our communities recover.
And as far as Deepwater Horizon, I read somewhere that the media, I guess among themselves, would refer to you as the face of the oil spill. Like you'd be the go-to guy to talk to about.
Yeah, I was on Anderson Cooper every night. You know, NBC, one newspaper, a news article called me the hardest working man in Louisiana. And another People magazine was made me person of the week. But there was a great team effort doing that. A lot of local leaders, fishermen, first responders were out there every night and every day fighting to keep that oil out of our marshes.
And I want to get on some state stuff, but while we're talking about it, is everything better in the Gulf now as far as the fisheries and the trouble areas?
You know, I've been, and we could do a whole segment on this, but I've been a very strong opposition to the diversions because they can't build land in our lifetime. So it's not going to lower storm surge. So why are we spending $3 billion? We could lower storm surge in the next 3 years and lower insurance rates, lower storm surge if we use dredges. The diversion cannot build land above the waterline. And a lot of people don't know this. At 11 o'clock on a Friday night, Congress gave a waiver. The president gave a waiver of the Marine Mammal Act. Never been done before. Instead of studying what this diversion is going to do to our fisheries, they're going to monitor for 5 years after they do it. What happens if we're right and it wipes out our fisheries? Are we going to shut it down after we spend $3 billion? Wouldn't you want to know up front? I've gone on record as saying this diversion is the largest fraud ever pulled over Louisiana eyes. We got enough money from BP to save our coast. God help us if we waste it. And we are wasting it in buttloads. And just follow the money. Who's got the contracts? The people that ran CPRA now work for those companies. It's unthinkable that we are going to waste this opportunity to save our coast and wipe out our fisheries. We kill more dolphins when we opened the spillway in 2019 than the BP oil spill. There's a study by St. Andrew Institute that says if we build these diversions on the Mississippi River, dolphins will be extinct in the Gulf within 50 years. It'll kill 70% in the first 5 years. Why? Because dolphins are territorial. They're not leaving. And when you see them dead with those sores all over their body, they die a horrible death. And the river is the second most polluted river in the country. We're going to dump all that pollution into the Barataria Basin. We will kill everything, oysters, shrimp, crabs. And people are scared to speak out against it because the politicians threaten you. They took $17 million out of my budget because I spoke out against it. And that's criminal.
Is there, this may not be a fair question, but is there any one person that you can pinpoint as being behind this?
Well, all the consultants, you know, the governor says he's following the science. No, he's following the people that are making money off it and following the consulting contracts. The chairman, the head of CPRA, left CPRA, went to work for the company. Find out where the CPRA, Chip Klein, just left to go work. Where did he go work? Company doing the work. It's criminal what they're doing. And it's only common sense. Put a dredge out there, lower storm surge in our lifetime. Does anybody really think we need a 50-year coastal plan? In 50 years, we'll be having the Grand Isle Fishing Rodeo in Baton Rouge. We better get out there with dredges and start building land, not marsh, land, and lower storm surge in our lifetime where nobody will be living below I-10. And it's unthinkable that we're going to let these scientists and these consultants that are getting rich designate how we possibly save our coast. Because a diversion cannot lower storm surge 1 inch. All the land it's going to build is below the waterline. So why are we doing it? If it's not going to lower storm surge and protect us, why would we do it?
And who do you get your strongest support from?
The fishermen, the oyster, the crabbers, and believe it or not, the mineral, the Marine Mammal Commission, who commissioned the study by St. Andrew Institute, thinks everybody in Louisiana is crooked. Why would you build something that's going to destroy the one industry that keeps coming back year after year? Mississippi is trying to stop the one on their side. I went and testified over there because they know it's going to wipe out the seafood all the way to Gulfport.
Okay. Congressman Garrett Graves, have you talked to him about this? Or
Garrett drank the Kool-Aid a long time ago. It was him and Bobby Jindal and two scientists in California that said, we got to open up the river like it was 1,000 years ago. It ain't the same river. It's a polluted river. And I'll leave it at that, Garrett was instrumental in getting a waiver of the Marine Mammal. Hey, if it's the right thing to do, why not follow the law, do the full environmental assessment? Because if they did it, Chip Klein said, if we did that, if we didn't get the waiver, we probably couldn't build it. Well, maybe we shouldn't. So we got a waiver. So we're going to spend $3 billion and monitor for 5 years. If we're right and it kills the seafood, we're going to shut it down after we spend $3 million? Wouldn't you want to follow the law and not get the waiver and know up front before you kill everything? No, they just want to hell-bent on building it.
Now, I happen to know that you had breakfast this morning with Congressman Steve Scalise. Did this topic come up during breakfast?
No. They've all, you know, I've tried to privately explain it to all of them. And I guess you go to Washington and you get clouded on really solving issues back home. And Steve's a good friend. You know, they all have so many consultants. And they've given money to every environmental group to buy their silence and get their support. So they haven't listened very well on this. But I did make one recommendation to Steve. You know, the insurance is unaffordable in Louisiana. And as a businessman, I can write off my premiums for my business from my flood insurance. With the increase in flood insurance, why wouldn't we pass a law in Baton Rouge and a federal law that lets our homeowners deduct their flood insurance from their taxes? Because it's unaffordable. People are going to lose their homes. This would be a great relief during these horrible times of insurance rates that would give a little bit of relief to these families. And that should be an easy sell.
It's a great idea. Congress
and in Baton Rouge.
It's a great idea. Let's talk a little bit about the other side of, another side of your job, and that is promoting tourism. And you just came back recently to a trip far away to Australia and New Zealand. First, how did you like those countries?
Beautiful. Beautiful countries. And surprisingly, the people are a lot like Louisiana. They're friendly. They're open. They like to travel. They love to have a good time. So I'm really excited about increasing the travelers from Australia and New Zealand. There's a direct flight from New Zealand into Houston now, many flights into Dallas. Australians love to rent a car and drive. They usually see two or three states. A lot of them head to Florida. Well, we're going to encourage trips to fly into Dallas and Houston. And as you come through North Louisiana and South Louisiana, stop in Lake Charles, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, pick up some boudin in Scott, Louisiana. So we're going to sell them on some itineraries. And the reason we went there, when I first got elected, I was in Arizona at a conference. And South Dakota got up and bragged on their biggest international market, I believe it was South Dakota, was Australia. So when she got off the stage, I said, ma'am, what do you have in South Dakota? She said, not much, but I go there. And most people that travel that far use a travel agent or a travel consultant to book their trip. And they know me. So I came home and said, we're going to Australia. Well, COVID canceled the first trip. So we went over and met, had dinner with hundreds of travel agents and travel consultants to put together packages to come to Louisiana. and I think it's going to be a great success. We have been so successful at the international market over the last 5 years for COVID. We just got a $300,000 grant from the Federal Commerce Department, little old Louisiana, to go to India, Italy, and Spain. So we're going to be able to open our doors to three new international markets over the next 3 years, where usually we got to pick and choose a couple to go to. And we know those international visitors stay longer and spend more money. So it's a great opportunity to get back to those record-breaking numbers.
Well, will it be possible, if somebody working on, like, if somebody is Australia, New Zealand, that they could go somewhere and buy a package?
Yeah, a package.
They'll give them their flight. They'll get them over here, and that'll give them their car rental and the information they need to travel from Houston and across, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what we're working on. We're working with them. We're working with the airlines. We're going to do some airline promotions, you know, fly New Zealand Air to Houston and come see us in Louisiana. Here's all the great things to do. We're also going to participate on some international travel missions where all the travel agencies come to these conferences in New Zealand and Australia. We'll have a booth at those shows. We're really going to up our game as these countries have opened back up and the people that do travel are looking to travel. So it's a great opportunity to expand our market.
Yeah. It's quite a commitment. It's a long ride to get here. But I guess if you live in Australia, you're used to anywhere you're going being a long ride.
Yeah. Well, you know, people beat up on me. Some of the negative people on social media say, yeah, Lieutenant Governor's taking a trip on our nickel. Well, first off, I upgrade to business class. So every time I travel internationally or more than 3 hours, it costs me thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. I take the cheapest flight, and then I don't turn in an expense account. The dinners and stuff I pay for, I pay out of my pocket. So I spend a lot of my, because I don't like the taxpayers paying for me to go out to eat dinner. So every trip I go on, it costs me personally, but that's okay. But they reimburse me for the minimal flight. The cheapest flight, and that's what they should do. So, but I enjoy it. I love selling Louisiana. We've got so much to offer, and we've got great tourism partners that go with us from all over the state.
Unfortunately, without mentioning any names, there's a certain mayor that's developed a reputation for lavish travel, and so I think everybody else gets torn by that a little bit.
Well, you know, when I got on the flight, we flew into Dallas, and the flight from Dallas to New Orleans, I sat in first class because that transferred over from the business class for the long flight. And as people got on, I said, hey, Lieutenant Governor, I said, I just want you to know I paid for this seat. You didn't pay for it. Well, after about the fifth time saying that, the stewardess said, do you want me to make you a sign that the Lieutenant Governor paid for the seat? Because everybody told me, hello, I wanted to make sure they didn't go back in the plane and think they were paying for my first class ticket.
Where do we stand with nonstop international airlines? Do we still have British Air or seasonal flying?
Yeah, we do. We do have British Air. You know, one of the things, and I have scheduled a meeting with Michael Heck and some of the business leaders in New Orleans. One of the things we have to do, we're doing real good at filling the back of the plane with tourists. We've got to create some business meetings in New Orleans and across Louisiana to fill the front of the plane. Maybe an international medical conference. We had talked to Tulane about that. So we bring in specialists into this Grace Medical Center. We got New Orleans to talk about new medicines. Maybe it's an international trade conference. We need to bring more international gatherings so those business people fill the front of the plane, because that's what helps fill new international flights. If when we fill in those business class expensive seats with business people.
Did the German airline ever come back after COVID?
It hasn't yet, but I think they're in talks to do that as well.
Yeah, I know there's been talk with Air France also.
Yes, and we actually met with, you know, our biggest international market is Canada. I think 40-something percent of international travelers is Canadian. And we, every time we go up there, we meet with Canadian Air And we're actually back talking to them about some sponsorships with a direct flight, because Canadians love to come down here in the winter.
Now, we had nonstop from them at one time, but then I guess it went away. I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah, we've got to rebuild a lot of those international connections. And you know, we're even working on South America, so we can partner with them and put up some marketing money if they'll commit to fly into New Orleans.
When people get here, okay, we know that New Orleans is the big attraction. I've had two people, the town of Franklin, somebody contacted, said, you got to come to Franklin, see how pretty Franklin is, that we've redone, and it's really, I haven't been there yet, but it's really worth seeing. And Kelly, my producer here, tells us that she's been to Hammond, and that Hammond has really done a revival. Again, I haven't seen that. But is that happening, or are some of the small towns really kind of spiffing up and making themselves better? And is there some kind of a grant program or something?
Yeah, I doubled down when I got elected, doubled the funding for the Main Street programs. We're also over historical preservation, redoing those old buildings. We also went into small communities and hold rural tourism summits, teaching businesses how to attract visitors. For instance, south of Lafayette, they got a great family breakfast place. With collaborating with them, we brought in Zydeco Music. Now it's a tourist attraction on Saturday morning where you go eat breakfast and hear Zydeco Music. We've helped the Gothic Museum in DeRidder, where the last person hung and the ghost lived there in DeRidder, Toledo Bend, Natchitoches. But we've been going all over the state. I made a commitment to promote every town and city in this state. And we've done a great job of that, and it continues to grow. We're also sponsoring sporting events, Olympic trials in Shreveport, Lake Charles. So we're seeing hotels going up all over Louisiana to support those sporting events. Great opportunity. We're also, I plan to merge in the next legislative session, the Secretary of State Museums with the Lieutenant Governors, have three museum boards, one in New Orleans, one in Baton Rouge, one in Shreveport. We are now videoing all 211 museums, and we bought the name LouisianaMuseums.com, where you can go online if you like history and know every history museum in the state. A lot of these museums are giving back to local government with no money to promote them. We're going to do that for them. But the people in Shreveport don't care about the Cabildo, and the people in New Orleans don't care about Shreveport. We need to, and I will give up control of the director of the museum. Was taken away from the board by the lieutenant governor years ago. I want to let them hire their own director. When you do that, you'll see a lot of private donations come into the museum system. Nobody wants to give the lieutenant governor money to spend. But when that director and that board can decide how to best spend it for the museums, you'll get a lot of private foundation money back in the museum system.
There are 211 museums in Louisiana?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And look, when we started putting him on social media and promoting him, people are going, wow, I didn't know that. So it's a great opportunity for us to cross market and drive people to every town and city. Tell people, if we don't start promoting the cities, towns outside New Orleans and the big cities, you can only go to New Orleans so many times and have a great time. But if you take a day trip and venture out, or you are Louisiana and you take a staycation and you go see new things, you're going to talk about it and tell your friends. Another great opportunity, people take a cruise out of New Orleans, come back, stay a night, and go home. Now we've got cruise ships going up the river, stopping in Vidalia, Baton Rouge, St. Francisville. We have two boats that dock in Mississippi and bus people over to our World Heritage Site at Poverty Point. The first time ever we've been able to get large groups of people to go visit that site that people have to otherwise drive 3 hours north. So another great opportunity to get large groups of people off these riverboats. We're going to see an additional probably 5 to 15 boats in the next 5 to 10 years going up the Mississippi. As we age, people don't want to go out to sea. Those river cruises are very popular in Europe, and we're working hard to add additional docks to get those people off in as many places in Louisiana as we can to spend money before they venture out of Louisiana.
Yeah, and the thing, it's also a short trip to get to New Orleans. If you live in the United States, you don't have to go to Europe to do all that and then get on. They're comfortable boats. A lot of the Viking really pioneered all this. That's a great step.
Yeah, it is. It's a great opportunity to really grow tourism groups all over the state, and it's been wildly successful.
And then we also have the so-called ocean cruise. They don't really go in the ocean, but the big cruise lines, they go to what they call the Western Caribbean, which is something that the cruise lines made up. There really wasn't the Western Caribbean. I mean, there was a Caribbean, all that, okay? And then they built their own beaches, but that's, you know, doing well too. And so that's really a real growth area in the economy.
It really is. And, you know, we know that that those visitors come and want to have a good time. And we just got to work on cleaning up the city. You know, we're going out to Las Vegas this year to promote the Super Bowl next year. We're going to put up some billboards by the airport and by the stadium that says the Super Bowl might be in Vegas, but the party's always in New Orleans. See you next year for the Super Bowl, just to get them thinking about Louisiana and all the festivities leading up to Super Bowl here in 2025.
When you talk to your colleagues, there are some cities, I guess the ultimate example is San Francisco. It's a wonderful, beautiful city, but they're in big trouble now because of homelessness and crime and businesses are closing down. And I was in Portland last month. You saw a little bit of that too. That's spreading around some really nice cities. How are you dealing with that?
Well, you know, I'm frustrated. I've offered my help as little or as much as they want. I offered to take over managing the quarter or partnering with the city and do like they did in San Diego with the Gas Lamp District. They appointed a board, people that live and work in that, and they manage it in conjunction with the city, cleaned it up, made it safe. We were able to get some crime cameras and a couple of hundred streetlights in the quarter, but we've been unsuccessful. And I just sent a letter to the mayor and the city council. I get hundreds of emails, texts, pictures of the homelessness, the nudity all over the quarter. People saying they're never coming back. They go to the bathroom in front of the cathedral. Our museum people have to go out and clean that up before church on Sunday at the cathedral. It is an embarrassment. It's disgusting. And I can't believe this city has not taken action. It is literally destroying the French Quarter. And I'm telling you, if we don't take action soon, it'll spiral out of control. The crime, cleanliness, and new attractions are three things that have been trending the wrong way for the last 10 years. And if it continues, we'll fall into a hole we won't come out of. You've got shops closing in the quarter. I hold my breath every day waiting for one of our famous restaurants to say, I had enough. I can't take it anymore. But let me tell you, it's an easy fix. You just got to have the will to do it. We've had a private investor offer money to set up a place outside the quarter to move the homeless to. And you say they got rights. We have a right to keep the citizens and tourists safe. And they're unhealthy. They threaten people. They need to be moved out. And if we can get them mental health, get them housing, that's great. But they can't sleep on the sidewalks and use the bathroom and harass our visitors and our residents. Listen, when I took office, we had 400 people on a waiting list to rent a Pontalba apartment. We have 5 vacant. Vacant. Nobody wants to live there. All the people that live there or had one of those apartments don't use it. They don't go in the quarter. They don't go eat. They don't go spend money there. It is at a breaking point. And all it takes, you can talk about it. You know, I saw where they went and gave some warnings to people selling stuff in the quarter illegally. Warnings, it ain't time for warnings. It's time for putting an end to it. And it's just going to take somebody that gives a shit to go out and do it. And whether that's the mayor, the city council, but you know, all they do is talk about it and it's not working.
And like I said, San Francisco is showing what can happen. Cause it's all over what's going on in San Francisco now. It's such a wonderful town. On one other topic, cause I know you're gonna have to go soon. There was a survey that came out, probably, maybe you haven't seen it, but anyway, by some internet company called Honeymoon Always. And what it does, it says it surveyed like 4,000 people of their favorite romantic destinations in the United States. And they listed like 175 of them by state. And right at the very beginning, you can see there are three that are always top every list. That's Maui, Napa Valley, and New Orleans. So they're like in a category for themselves, okay? But then they went on for the rest of the cities, what they call alternative romantic destinations, 175. St. Aug was first, and a couple of cities in Hawaii. The highest ranking in Louisiana was Breaux Bridge, which was number 77, which on this list isn't bad, you know, but I mean, it's, I guess it's not as good as something else. And then Natchitoches is on the list. Natchitoches was before Breaux Bridge. Natchitoches was 130, and Breaux Bridge was 77. But you got all kinds of towns, like the Butte and Danbury, Connecticut, and all that kind of thing. But there is that market there. There is those, I guess, what you call like secondary destinations that go there. I'm not quite sure what the big attraction is in Breaux Bridge. I mean, I know Breaux Bridge. There's crawfish and there's music, but I wouldn't think of it as a romantic town, but apparently these people do. Natchitoches, you got the river, and so.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's, I tell people all over, we got great food, music, and culture, but our number one attraction, it's the people. We treat strangers like family. They leave with a friend for life, and they keep coming back for more. And that's all over Louisiana. Breaux Bridge has a beautiful park there on the river. They got great music. It is a, you get a warm and fuzzy feeling when you're there. Natchitoches, you know, they've got that hardware store, been in the same family for 100 years, the shops, that riverfront. It's people still go there because of the Steel Magnolia movie. So I think those small towns across Louisiana, as people visit them, they fall in love with them. And I hear that all over the world about every little, you know, town around Homer Morgan City. We started promoting Mardi Gras all over Louisiana. Family-friendly, safe, affordable Mardi Gras. We've got people that come from all over the world go to Mardi Gras in South Louisiana and North Louisiana and Lafayette and Lake Charles and Natchitoches and Ruston and Shreveport. So we've expanded, besides just making New Orleans the focus, letting people know there's other places in Louisiana that are just as much fun and entertaining.
Right. I guess it's up to the tourist industry to develop those kind of packages and get it going on. You know, if people could fly to New Orleans and somebody in New Orleans would have that kind of package for them to go out throughout the state, you know, it would be a good thing.
Well, we're working on putting some booths together to put in a convention center with some of our tourism folks. So when people in the convention center for conventions, we can kind of tell them about other day trips and places to go around Louisiana. While we've got them here, we got to do a better job at letting them know about all Louisiana has to offer.
Okay. Well, one last thing. You travel around the state a lot. Tell me like one or two of your favorite out of the way destinations that maybe people wouldn't have heard of that you like. Could be a restaurant or a place to stay or something.
Well, I went on my staycation to Toledo Bend. You can fish, catch a lot of fish. That resort there will cook the fish you caught up. Great place to relax, get away. They got a great golf course there. And then we went to Natchitoches to see the Christmas lights. That town is magical for Christmas. But I recommend everybody go see our World Heritage Site, Poverty Point. We've got a new conference center up there, great golf course, way up in the northeast corner. But Ruston, Monroe, all of, you know, Shreveport, Bossier, and then you head down to Alexandria Pondville, and all across Louisiana, every town and city has so much to offer. I've been doing this job 7 years, and if Louisiana will have me another 4 years, everywhere I go, I learn something new and something exciting. And I think every Louisiana should get out and make it their tour to get around and tour all of Louisiana. I promise they won't be disappointed.
That's for sure. And it's always been a good way, a state of mixed cultures between North Louisiana and South Louisiana. you know, two different worlds, you know.
It's worlds apart, but it all comes together in the gumbo.
I want to mention that I know your office sponsored this seafood cook-off with the state champion. They've been doing that for several years now. And the first year they did it, I was actually a judge. And it was held at the Royal Sonesta. And I remember the guy who won was from a place called Hot Dales in New Roads. It was really good. There were 10 different places. We had to eat the place in 10 different places. Well, the one that won this year is also, it's not the same guy.
Okay.
No. I don't know if they work together, but I've been sold. But Hot Tails won again. So who would think Hot Tails would win twice in a row with this kind of competition?
Well, that was 10 years ago. But every year, that you don't know, you know, they bring them up. They test the dishes, new judges. They score them on the taste, the look, the ingredients, their presentation. And it's a tough competition. And whoever wins, I send a letter to every lieutenant governor, invite them to send their best seafood chef. During the restaurant show in August, our chef will now compete against 14 chefs from around the country for the national king or queen of seafood. So again, we'll live stream that back in all their states. So we'll get a lot of exposure for Louisiana seafood when we do that at the restaurant show in August in New Orleans.
Wow, great. Well, I'm glad we got the Gulf cleaned up in time. We thought we'd have the seafood, you know. So
absolutely.
Anyway, this has been Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser. Thank you very much for all your work and for giving us your time.
Always, my friend. Great to be with you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.